Every 4 years since 1976, the U.S. Catholic bishops have issued a major statement on political responsibility. In November of 2015, they overwhelmingly adopted Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship, a call to political responsibility. You may already be familiar with the 2007 statement on Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship, to which an introductory note was added in 2011. You may be wondering, what's different about the 2015 statement? What's the same? In the words of the bishops, in the introduction to the 2015 statement, they write, "This document consists mainly of the statement adopted overwhelmingly by the bishops in 2007, plus certain limited revisions by way of update. In particular, this version draws on the wealth of papal teaching since the 2007 version, such as the later magisterium of Pope Benedict XVI and that of Pope Francis to date. Specifically, they cite the inextricable link between our witness to the truth and our service to those in need, our role as missionary disciples called forth from the sanctuary to bring Christ to the margins with joy, and care for our common home and all who dwell in it, especially the poorest." This version also takes into account recent developments in the United States in both domestic and foreign policy. Finally, it organizes its themes around the four foundational principles of Catholic social teaching: human dignity, the common good, solidarity, and subsidiarity. More on these in a minute. But first, let's begin our summary by answering the question, what is Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship?
Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship provides a framework to guide political engagement, especially for U.S. Catholics. In the introduction to the statement, the bishops write, "This statement represents our guidance for Catholics in the exercise of their rights and duties as participants in our democracy. We urge our pastors, lay and religious faithful, and all people of goodwill to use this statement to help form their consciences, to teach those entrusted to their care, to contribute to civil and respectful public dialogue, and to shape political choices in the coming election in light of Catholic teaching." I've just described what the statement is. Now let's talk about what it isn't. The bishops write, "In this statement, we bishops do not intend to tell Catholics for whom or against whom to vote. Our purpose is to help Catholics form their consciences in accordance with God's truth. We recognize that the responsibility to make choices in political life rests with each individual in light of a properly formed conscience, and that participation goes well beyond casting a vote in a particular election. Faithful citizenship is not a voter's guide or a scorecard of issues. It doesn't offer direction on how to vote, tell Catholics who to vote for, or offer guidance on which candidate or party best reflects the Church's moral framework. Instead, it affirms the positive role of the Church and Catholics in political life. It shares Church teaching as a moral framework to help assess issues, political platforms, and campaigns. And it summarizes Church teaching on some of the important issues that face our communities and our world today. Faithful citizenship is a call to participate. In the first paragraph of their statement, the bishops quote Pope Francis, who writes in Evangelii Gaudium, "An authentic faith always involves a deep desire to change the world, to transmit values, to leave this earth somehow better than we found it. The earth is our common home, and all of us are brothers and sisters. If indeed the just ordering of society and of the state is a central responsibility of politics, the Church cannot and must not remain on the sidelines in the fight for justice." The Church has both a right and a duty to participate in public life. The Church's obligation to participate in shaping the moral character of society is a requirement of our faith, bishops write. And as Pope Francis reminds us in Evangelii Gaudium, the Church's pastors have the right to offer opinions in all that affects people's lives, since the task of evangelization implies and demands the integral promotion of each human being. As Americans, citizens of the world's most powerful democracy, we have the right and duty to bring our moral convictions to the public's arena. The inclusion of religious voices in public life enhances our nation's tradition of pluralism which we value so dearly. This right and duty to participate is not only at the institutional level. It is a call for each one of us. In the Catholic tradition, responsible citizenship is a virtue, and participation in political life is a moral obligation. This participation is rooted, the bishops remind us, in our baptismal commitment to follow Jesus Christ and to bear Christian witness in all we do. The Catechism of the Catholic Church tells us that the obligation to participate is inherent in the dignity of the human person. Faithful citizenship is an opportunity for catechesis about discipleship. By our baptism, we become members of Christ's body and his mission to bring good news to the poor, liberty to captives, new sight to the blind, and to set the downtrodden free, as Jesus says in the Gospel of Luke, quoting the prophet Isaiah. As disciples of Christ, we are called to be instruments of grace, working to defend life, pursue justice, help make God's kingdom present, and heal the brokenness of the world. Our baptismal call includes our political and public responsibilities. There are many ways that Catholics in the pews can engage. The statement gives a few examples: running for office, working within political parties, communicating their concerns and positions to elected officials, and joining diocesan social mission or advocacy networks, state Catholic conference initiatives, community organizations, and other efforts to apply authentic moral teaching in the public square. Pope Francis notes in Evangelii Gaudium, and the bishops quote him in Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship, "Politics, though often denigrated, remains a lofty vocation and one of the highest forms of charity, inasmuch as it seeks the common good. I beg the Lord to grant us more politicians who are genuinely disturbed by the state of society, the people, the lives of the poor." Finally, it's important to point out that participation in the public square is not only the right and duty of citizens or people of voting age. Even those who cannot vote have the right to have their voices heard on issues that affect their lives and the common good. Anyone who lives in this country has the right and responsibility to participate in political life, perhaps not by voting or running for office, but certainly in working to ensure that the voices of the most vulnerable are heard so that the well-being of everyone can be realized. Pause for a moment to consider, and if you are gathered with others, to discuss. Why is participation in political life part of your baptismal call? How do you bring your faith values into the public square? In addition to being a call to participate, the statement is also a call to do exactly what its title says: form consciences. Conscience formation is essential so that Catholics are equipped to address the issues that face our world and communities. The process of forming consciences, which the bishops outline, involves approaching issues with an openness to seek the truth, studying sacred scripture and the teaching of the church, examining facts and background information, and prayerful reflection. This is a call and invitation to families, pastors, religious educators, and others with a role in forming and guiding the Catholic faithful, not only young people, but all Catholics. Conscience formation is a lifelong task. Just as we need to form our consciences in light of Catholic teaching, we also have to cultivate the virtue of prudence. Prudence, the bishops write, shapes and informs our ability to deliberate over available alternatives, to determine what is most fitting to a specific context, and to act decisively. Exercising this virtue often requires the courage to act in defense of moral principles when making decisions about how to build a society of justice and peace. The statement is also a call to civility. At a time when we hear anything but civil and respectful dialogue among candidates, interest groups, super PACs, and even sometimes among family members, we have to be examples and witnesses of the civil and respectful dialogue we want to see, modeling the love and charity of disciples of Christ. The bishops note, we are committed to clarity about our moral teaching and to civility. In public life, it is important to practice the virtues of charity and justice that are at the core of our tradition. The bishops call for a renewed kind of politics, focused more on moral principles than on the latest polls, focused more on the needs of the weak than on benefits for the strong, and focused more on the pursuit of the common good than on the demands of narrow interests. The bishops identify two temptations that can impede our ability to authentically defend human life and dignity. I will quote directly from Numbers 28 and 29 here. The exact text says it best. The first temptation is a moral equivalence that makes no ethical distinctions between different kinds of issues involving human life and dignity. The direct and intentional destruction of innocent human life from the moment of conception until natural death is always wrong and is not just one issue among many. It must always be opposed. The second temptation is the misuse of these necessary moral distinctions as a way of dismissing or ignoring other serious threats to human life and dignity. The bishops continue, the current and projected extent of environmental degradation has become a moral crisis, especially because it poses a risk to humanity in the future and threatens the lives of poor and vulnerable human persons here and now. Racism and other unjust discrimination, the use of the death penalty, resorting to unjust war, the use of torture, war crimes, the failure to respond to those who are suffering from hunger or a lack of health care, pornography, redefining civil marriage, compromising religious liberty, or an unjust immigration policy are all serious moral issues that challenge our consciences and require us to act. These are not optional concerns which can be dismissed. Catholics are urged to seriously consider church teaching on these issues. Although choices about how best to respond to these and other compelling threats to human life and dignity are matters for principled debate and decision, this does not make them optional concerns or permit Catholics to dismiss or ignore. The bishops urge us to also remember that we have two duties, one negative and one positive. On the negative side, there are some things we must never do as individuals or as a society because they are always incompatible with the love of God and neighbor. These are called intrinsically evil actions. They must always be rejected and opposed and never must be supported or condoned. Examples they mention include the intentional taking of innocent human life, as in abortion and euthanasia, human cloning, destructive research on human embryos, genocide, torture, the targeting of non-combatants in acts of terror or war, racism, treating workers as mere means to an end, deliberately subjecting workers to subhuman living conditions, treating the poor as disposable, or redefining marriage to deny its essential meaning. At the same time, there is a second duty. Opposition to intrinsically evil acts, which undercut the dignity of the human person, should also open our eyes to the good we must do. That is, to our positive duty to contribute to the common good and to act in solidarity with those in need. They note that the right to life implies and is linked to other human rights, to the basic goods that every human person needs to live and thrive. All the life issues are connected, for erosion of respect for the life of any individual or group in society necessarily diminishes respect for all life. The moral imperative to respond to the needs of our neighbors, basic needs such as food, shelter, healthcare, education, and meaningful work, is universally binding on our consciences and may be legitimately fulfilled by a variety of means. The bishops conclude, both opposing evil and doing good are essential obligations. This guidance on temptations and duties is a reaffirmation of the unity of Catholic thought. The bishops warn, this document is to be read prayerfully and in its totality. It would be a serious mistake, and one that occurs with regrettable frequency, to use only selected parts of the church's teaching to advance partisan political interests or validate ideological biases. All of us are called to be servants to the whole truth in authentic love, and it is our fervent hope and prayer that this document will provide aid to all those seeking to heed this call. Let's pause for a moment to consider. Why is conscience formation important? How do the two temptations and two duties help us witness to the unity of Catholic thought?